Lesson 25. Words and Expressions. Aid. Arrest. Bar. Bone. Cell. Champagne. Clothe. Commit. Content. Crime. Criminal. Decent. Defend. Diner. Donate. Drift. Entree. Feed. Fed. Fried. Grand. Hunger. Illegal. Island. Jail. Jail. Lawyer. Legal. Lunchtime. Maddening. Midtown. Napkin. Offender. Order. Petty. Plead. Plead guilty. Pocket. Pork. Prison. Prosecutor. Punish. Punishment. Quit. Reduce. Refuge. Repeat. Screen. Seat. Seldom. Sentence. Serial. Slip. Slip on. Society. Steal. Stole. Stolen. Tasty. Taxpayer. Tooth. Teeth. Thief. Thieves. Unfold. Urge. Proper nouns. Brag. Christina. Gangaram. Mahes. Manhattan. Rick. Rikers Island. Swans. Text. The Simple Life. A Fine Dinner, a Drink, and Jail. After Rick Bragg. Every now and then, Gangaram Mahes slips on his best donated clothes and lives the high life. He walks to a nice restaurant, has a glass of champagne, eats a $50 meal, and finishes with hot black coffee. The waiters call him Sir. But Mahes could not find a dollar from his pocket for even a bus ride. He is a thief who never runs, a criminal who picks his teeth as the police close in. To be arrested, to go home to a cell at Rikers Island, that's his plan when he unfolds his napkin. Homeless, off and on for several years, he steals dinner from the restaurants because he wants the courts to return him to a place in New York where he is guaranteed 3 meals a day and a clean bed. In a prison system filled with repeat offenders, the 36-year-old Mahes is a serial diner. He has committed the same crime at least 31 times, always pleads guilty, and never urges his lawyer to ask for a reduced sentence. "It's tough on the outside," said Mahes, who is serving 90 days for stealing a steak from a midtown Manhattan restaurant. Prosecutors say it isn't their job to consider whether locking up some criminals actually gives them what they want, refuge from poverty or hunger. But legal aid lawyers say they've seen a small but growing number of people who commit petty crimes with the intention of going to prison. Life in prison is sometimes violent, but to Mahes it is better than drifting from shelter to shelter or living in cardboard boxes. "There is order in a prison, and you always eat on time," he said. "I like to live decent," he said. "I like to be clean." Christina Swarms, a legal aid lawyer defending a man who does not want her help, faces Mahes through the wire screen and does not know whether to laugh or cry. "It's funny at first, the serial eater," she said. "But it's a very sad thing. How bad is it, his life, that he would prefer prison?" On one hand is a man who goes to jail at will without having hurt anyone, who steals only expensive New York restaurant food. Instead of throwing a rock through a window, he orders a T-bone steak. On the other hand, is a man who seems to have given up hope of ever having anything better, who prefers society's punishment to his place in the society. In the past 2 years, he has seldom been free more than a few days before enjoying an illegal entree. He chooses restaurants that are not too cheap, not too expensive. If a restaurant is too grand, it might not seat him. If it is too cheap, he might not be arrested for stealing its food. "If they really wanted to punish him," said Swarms, "they would stand outside Rikers and say, 'You go away.'" Instead, Mahes does 90 days for stealing fish. It costs taxpayers $162 a day to feed, clothe, and house him at Rikers Island. His 90-day sentence will cost them $14,580 to punish him for refusing to pay the $51.31 check. In 5 years, he has cost them more than $250,000. Swans said it was maddening to defend him. Every time she gives him her card and tells him to call, so she can help when he gets out, he throws it away. She cannot compete with prison. The food at Riker's is tasty, said Mayhis. For supper, he had pork chops. He said he was thinking of quitting this life some day, but when the bus came to take him back to Riker's, he was content. It was almost lunchtime. Fried chicken, he said. He does not have a family to miss him. He does not have an old neighborhood where people know his name. The bars at Riker's Island are there to hold him in and to hold on to.
Lesson 26. Words and Expressions. Ahead. Axe. Bark. Below. Bite. Bit. Bitten. Chop. Cleanly. Courage. Excitement. Fireplace. Fog. Glove. Honest. Honesty. Interfere. Ma'am. Madam. Mountain. Pant. Pile. Purple. Repair. Settle. Shoulder. Smoky. Steady. Surround. Tear. Tall. Torn. Thin. Thoughts. Troubled. Worn. Washing. Proper nouns. Carolina. Jerry. Kinnan. Marjorie. Pat. Rawlings. Smoky Mountains. Text. A small boy's mother. 1. I was living in the Smoky Mountains in Carolina. It was autumn. I needed quiet, to be away from people. My mind was troubled, and the mountain air helped me write better. I also wanted to see the red autumn leaves, the pumpkins, and to feel the excitement of living free and alone. I found them all in a small house which belonged to the children's home. The house is cut off from the village below and from the world by deep mountain snows. The heavy fog that surrounds the Smoky Mountains hides the house from the eyes of the people. When I moved into the house, I asked the lady at the children's home to send a boy to cut wood for the fireplace. About a week later, I looked up from my writing, a little surprised. There, in front of me, was a small boy. My dog, Pat, had not barked to warn me. The boy wore old torn pants and a shirt worn thin from too many washings. He wore no shoes on his feet. I can cut some wood today, he said. But I have a boy coming from the children's home. I'm the boy. You? But you're so small. I can carry milk to the baby's house, Mom. Some days I carry it 2 times. In this bitter wind? Yes'm. Stiff fingers don't feel bad once you get used to them. We get our faces bitten by the cold wind because we can't put our hands over them. But I have gloves. Some of the boys don't have any gloves. But cutting wood is a man's job. He smiled at me. I know all kinds of wood, Mum. I've been cutting wood at the children's home for a long time. Very well. There's the axe. Go ahead and try cutting and see what you can do. I began to work again. The first sounds of the axe cutting through the wood interfered with my thoughts. But soon the steady chop, chop stopped troubling me. I settled down and wrote for the rest of the afternoon. The sun was slowly dropping behind the cold purple mountains when I heard the boy's footsteps coming toward my door. I have to go eat now. I can come again tomorrow afternoon. I'll pay you for what you've done. We went together to see his work. Next to the house was a lot of cleanly cut wood. But you've cut as much as a man. This is a wonderful pile of wood. I gave him some money. You may come again tomorrow, and thank you very much. He looked at me, and then at the money. He seemed as if he wanted to talk, but he could not. He turned away, but over his thin shoulder he shouted back to me. I'll cut some small pieces tomorrow. You'll need some small thin pieces and some heavier ones. He came again the next day and worked until it was time to leave. His name was Jerry. He was 12 years old and had been at the children's home since he was only 4. I thought of him as he must have looked when he was 4 years old. The same strong grey eyes with a small ring of blue around them. The same integrity and courage. Integrity is honesty, but it is more than just being honest. For example, the handle of the axe broke one day. Jerry said the children's home would repair it. I handed him some money to pay for it. He wouldn't take the money. I'll pay for it, Mum. I broke it. I didn't hit the wood in the right place. But, Jerry, no one hits the wood in the right place all the time. It was a weak handle. I'll speak to the man who sold it to me. It was only then that he would take the money. Lesson 27. Words and Expressions. Abandon. Afraid. Aloud. Anger. Birthday. Climb. Completely. Dare. Dig. Especially. Happiness. Helpful. Lie. Lay. Lane. Loose. Necessary. Pair. Place. Quality. Soft. Sort. Sound. Spirit. Stone. Storm. strangely. Stupidity. Sudden. Proper noun. Manville. Text. A small boy's mother, too. Another thing about Jerry that was special. He would do those little helpful things that are not necessary, but make life so much easier. Things only the heart can do. Things that cannot be trained or taught, for they are done quickly and without thought. He found a hole near the fireplace that I had not seen. "I'll place some wood in the hole, Mom. Then when a sudden storm comes up, you can stay warm." Or the day he found a loose stone in the walking place outside. "Let me place a bigger stone there. I'll dig the hole deeper so it won't come loose again." The days passed, and Jerry and my dog Pat became close friends. Perhaps it was because a boy and a dog have a common spirit, a wisdom that is closer than a grown person and a dog. One cold day, Jerry sat close by me near the fire. The dog lay close to him. We watched the fire burn. Jerry suddenly talked of something he had never talked of before. "You look like my mother, especially next to the fire." "But you were only 4, Jerry, when you came to live at the children's home. Do you still remember your mother?" He nodded his head. "Yes, my mother lives near Manville." Learning he had a mother surprised me. I also felt anger against her. How could she abandon such a nice boy? Children's home was nice. People there were kind, and the boys were healthy. But what sort of person was his mother? Jerry must have looked as nice then as he did now. His fine qualities have always been there. Any person could see them. My heart filled with questions I dared not ask. I was afraid I would cause him pain, so I talked to him carefully. "Have you seen your mother lately?" "I see her every summer. She sends for me." I wanted to cry aloud. "Why are you here? Why aren't you with her? How can she let you go away again?" But I said nothing. Jerry talked with happiness in his heart. "She comes for me from Manville whenever she can. She isn't working right now. She wanted to give me a dog, but they say a boy can't have a dog at the home. She sent me a Sunday suit, and last Christmas she sent me a bicycle. I let the other boys play with the bicycle when they promised to be careful with it." My mind was busy trying to understand his mother. She had not completely forgotten him, but why? What was the reason other than being poor then? Jerry, still sounding happy, talked in a very soft voice. "I'm going to take the dollar you gave me and buy her a pair of gloves. White gloves. She likes white gloves." I could say nothing except, "That will be nice," for I hated her. There was other food than bread, food for the soul and for the heart that only a mother can give. He was going to buy gloves for his mother, while she lived in Manville away from him. I decided I would not leave the mountains until I talked with her to learn why she had placed him in a children's home. But the human mind finds many things to think about. Every wind seems to blow new and different thoughts into it. I finished my work, but it did not please me. my thoughts turned to travel. I decided to go to Mexico and then perhaps on to other places. I did not take the time to see Jerry's mother. I was busy preparing to leave. And after that night by the fire, we did not speak about her again. The fact that he had a mother, and sort of a mother, made me feel better about him. When I was ready to leave, I said to him, "Jerry, you've been my good friend. I still think of you often and miss you very much. Pat will miss you too after we leave tomorrow." He did not answer. I watched him climb the hill in silence. I expected him to come the next day, but he did not come. I placed all my things in the car, closed the house, then drove to the children's home to see him. I told the lady there that I was leaving and asked her to call Jerry so I could say goodbye. She was troubled. "I do not know where he is. I am afraid he might be sick. He didn't eat his dinner, and one of the boys said he had gone for a walk in the woods." My heart felt better. I hate goodbyes, and I knew I would never see him again. It was better for both of us this way. "Here's some money," I said. "Will you use it to buy him things for his birthday and for Christmas? I might buy him the same things his mother buys. This way, he'll get different things and, well, not two bicycles, for example." She looked at me strangely and said, "There isn't much place to ride a bicycle in the mountains." Her stupidity began to bother me. "What I mean is, I don't want to buy him things his mother might buy him. I might have bought him a bicycle if I hadn't learned she had bought him one." She still looked at me. Then she finally said, "I don't understand. He has no mother. He has no bicycle."
Lesson 28. Words and Expressions. Brain. Clearly. Color. Color. County. Cover. Crowd. Declare. Design. Dream. Dreamt. Dreamed. Exact. Extra. Fever. Finish. Fit. Housework. Minute. Nervous. Paint. Pretty. Pride. Queen. Quilt. So. Sister-in-law. Slow. Spread. Spread. Surprise. Tear. Usual. Warmth. Proper nouns. Canfield. Dorothy. Fisher. Mahatabu. Sophia. Text. The Bed Quilt. 1. After Dorothy Canfield Fisher. Aunt Mahatabu was an old woman. She had never married and had never been important to anyone. But she worked hard in the farmhouse doing the jobs nobody else wanted. She lived with her brother's busy family. Her brother's wife, Sophia, a big, healthy farm woman, was queen of the house. She was sorry for Mahatabu and often let the old woman do what she loved best, sewing little pieces of cloth into quilts. These made pretty covers for the beds. Mahatabu made them in a special way, so that each quilt looked like a painting. Sometimes other farm women would ask Mahatabu to help them plan their quilts. One day, Mahatabu suddenly got a new and wonderful idea for a quilt. She did not understand how the idea came to her. Sometimes she thought she dreamed it. Sometimes she wondered if God had sent it to her. She was too old and slow to think of it without any help. It was too different, too beautiful to have come from her simple brain. Even when she wrote the design on paper, she could not believe that it was really hers. But the longer she worked with it, the more she wanted to see it come to life in a quilt. Mahatabu went to her sister-in-law for permission to start such a difficult job. "Why, yes, Mahatabu," Sophia said. "Why, yes, start another quilt if you like. I've some cloth you can use too." Mahatabu tried to tell Sophia that this was a special quilt. She did not know how to say it. So she stood there, looking at the floor, trying to think of the right words. At last, Sophia said, "Never mind, do not try to tell me about it. Use whatever design you like." Mahatabu rushed happily up the steps to her room and started the work at once. It would be the one important thing in her life. She knew it would be the most beautiful quilt she would ever make. Excited, nervous, she spread pieces of cloth across the bed. Then she carefully chose the exact colors for her design. She cut the pieces so that they would fit together perfectly. Mahatabu decided to sew just one part of the design first to see what it would look like. She had little time or energy for this new job. Her housework got most of the day, but she used every extra minute to sew her quilt. As the design grew, Mahatabu was in a fever to finish it. Every day she did her housework faster so that she could escape early to her little room and sewed. Finally, she could wait no longer to show it to the family. That evening, she brought her sewing down beside the fire where the others sat. She hoped someone would ask to see her design. But, as usual, they did not even know she was there. When she stood up to go to bed, the cloth fell out of her old hands. Mahatabu moved to pick it up. Sophia stopped her. Is that part of the new quilt you are making? She asked. Let me see it. As Sophia held it near a light, she clearly saw the beauty of the design. Where did you get the idea for it? She cried, eyes wide with surprise. It is mine, Mahatabal said with quiet pride. No, said Sophia. She studied the way Mahatabal had joined the small pieces of cloth. Why, I never saw such a wonderful design and such good sewing in my life. The family crowded around the two women. Mr. Smith himself came over to see what they were making so much noise about. Well, I declare, he said, looking at Mahatabal with more warmth than she could ever remember, that design will win a prize of any county fair. Mahatabal's face got red, and tears of happiness wet her eyes. That night, she was too proud and excited to sleep. By the end of summer, Sophia had fixed a special place in the living room for Mahatabal to sew. The light was hotter here than in her small dark room. Such kindness surprised Mahatabal, and she worked twice as hard in the house for her sister-in-law. Lesson 29. Words and Expressions. Arm. Breath. Buggy. Cattle. Ceiling. Examine. Glove. Gold. Golly. Honor. Honor. Joke. Kilometer. Kilometer. Loneliness. Moon. Pale. Shoulder. Struggle. Trip. Wave. Yell. Proper noun. Smith. Text. The Bed Quilt. 2. After Dorothy Canfield Fisher. Her life had changed in many ways. There was always the quilt to think about. Day and night, the picture of the design was bright in her thoughts. And the family stopped asking her to do extra jobs in the house. Leave Aunt Mahatabal alone, Sophia would say. Don't you see she is sewing on her quilt? News about Mahatabal's quilt quickly spread around the area. People came from all parts of the country to see the design. The Smiths bought new clothes for Mahatabal, and one of the girls made a little hat to cover her thin white hair. They wanted their famous Aunt Mahatabal to look good for the visitors. A year went by, and a fourth of the quilt was finished. A second year passed, and a half was done. The third year, Mahatabal became sick, and was afraid she might die before her work of art was completed. But she got better, and her hands were busy again. In September of the fifth year, with the family watching, Mahatabal sewed the last piece on her quilt. Nobody spoke. The moment they had all waited for had finally arrived. The girls held the quilt up, and the Smiths looked at it in silence. Then Mr. Smith hit his leg with one large hand and shouted, "My golly! That quilt is going to the county fair." Mahatabal felt that her life was complete. But when the quilt was carried out of the house, her heart went with it. The quilt had been almost like a child to her. She did not know how she could live without it. For years it had filled her life, and now there was nothing. Sophia told her the quilt was hanging in a place of honor where everyone could see it. This did not mean anything to Mahatabal, who knew nothing about the world outside the farm. The family saw the old woman's loneliness, and Sophia said, "You feel lost and empty without the quilt, don't you?" "They took it away so quickly," Mahatabal said, tears shining in her eyes. "I did not have time to enjoy it." Later in the day, Mr. Smith put an arm around her thin shoulders. "I must go to a farm on the other side of the fair tomorrow. If you can get up early in the morning, I will take you with me. You can stay at the fair all day and come back with me at night." Mahatabal looked at him with her mouth open. It was as if he had promised her a ride in a gold buggy to the moon. Why, you must be joking," she cried, her face white with emotion. Her brother laughed. "No, it is not a joke," he said gently. "Now you get your things ready. We start early tomorrow." All that night, an excited old woman lay and looked up at the bedroom ceiling. She, who had never been away from home in her life, was going more than 40 kilometers to the county fair. It was like a trip around the world. The next morning, the family told her what to look at in the fair. Sophia told her to see the prize food and dresses. Her brother said she must examine the best cattle. They all stood and waved goodbye as Mr. Smith drove the horse and buggy down the road. When Mahatabal returned home that night, she was very pale and too tired to move. Her brother carefully carried her into the house. The others crowded around to hear news of the fair. "Now, Mahatabal," Sophia said, "tell us all about it." Mahatabal took a deep breath. "It was just perfect," she said. "Better than I thought it would be." "Did you see the prize cattle?" asked Mr. Smith. "And the dresses? added the girls. I did not see anything except the quilt, said Mahatabu slowly. I went straight to the room where it was, and then I did not want to leave. People began coming in, and I got so interested in hearing what they said, I just stayed. I am glad I did. Oh, do you know what happened? She stopped and looked at the others with pride in her eyes. A man came in and put a sign that said, First prize on my quilt. The girls yelled and jumped around the room. This was more than they had hoped for. When the room became quiet again, Sophia asked, Didn't you see anything else? Why, no, Mahatabu said softly. I just saw my quilt. Why should I look at anything else? She struggled to tell them how wonderful it was, but the words would not come. There was no way she could explain how she felt inside. So she just looked around at their faces with a strange smile. The smile of an artist had made her dream come along. Lesson 30. Words and Expressions. Accident. Allowance. Appear. Attached. Backyard. Bargain. Block. Cane. Cheer. Concerned. Doghouse. Fake. Fetch. Garage. Guess. Illness. Impress. Inch. Jeans. Lawn. Lick. Loud. Lie. Lay. Lane. Maybe. Mom. Mower. Neat. Neglect. Pen. Pet. Portable. Recognize. Shirt. T-shirt. Smart. Sneak. Stick. Subject. Trick. Weekend. Whistle. Proper nouns. Drew. Tommy. Yorkie. Text. Yorkie. This happened on my 11th birthday. It was a Saturday. Mom and Dad had given me $15 to buy my own gift. But what, I wondered. I had a good bike, an almost new baseball glove, a nice portable radio. Well, I thought, maybe some new jeans and a shirt. Smith's store had some really neat T-shirts with Save Gas, Walk in big letters on the front. But then I passed Mr. Drew's pet shop, and there was this really great-looking little dog. When he saw me, he barked twice and stood up on its hind legs. Well, I don't know what it was. Maybe because he seemed to recognize me or something. I just had to get a closer look. And when I went inside, he almost jumped out of his pen. "There, there," Mr. Drew said. "Calm down, Yorkie, calm down." When I reached down to pat him, he licked my hand like it was candy. "Say now, Tommy," Mr. Drew said, "you've got a friend here." Yorkie was jumping up and down, trying to get out of that pen. You would have thought we'd been friends for years. To make a long story short, I had to have that dog. Mr. Drew said he was a bargain, which made me want him even more. I could have him for only $25. "I'll be back," I said. My dad was working on the lawnmower out in the garage when I came running in out of breath. "Dad," I said, "Dad, I just got to have this dog. He's the neatest thing you ever saw. And he acts like he knows me, and he's a real bargain, and..." Dad told me to calm down, and then he listened as I repeated everything. He wasn't too impressed. That's when I told him I'd never wanted anything so much in my life. And that's when he told me that was because I always got what I wanted before I wanted it. "It's my birthday," I said. "Tommy," he said, "you've got to learn the value of a dollar. Money doesn't just appear, it has to be earned, and the extra 10 can come out of my allowance," I said. One difference between me and my dad is this. He thinks to himself. I think out loud. He was quiet for a long time. But I got the dog. It's still funny, you know, the way Yorkie and I took to each other. Mom said later it was because I never had a brother or sister. Anyway, we were together every minute that I was out of school. But then it got so that every time I turned around, Mom was saying, "No. No, Yorkie cannot sleep in your bed. Dogs don't sleep in beds. No, Yorkie cannot walk to school with you, even if he does know the way back. No, Yorkie cannot go to the movies with you. No, Yorkie cannot watch television with us. Dogs don't watch television." "But Yorkie does," I said. "I think he fakes it," Dad said. "How can you tell when a dog's faking?" I asked him. "I can tell," Dad said. I didn't argue. Parents are like that. I built Yorkie a doghouse, which he didn't like. So at night I'd sneak him in the back and he'd sleep under my bed. Most weekends I spent teaching him tricks, the usual ones, you know. In 2 months' time, he knew how to shake hands and roll over and fetch a stick. I even taught him how to jump over a cane 18 inches off the floor. Smart dog, Dad said. I hear they take after their owners, I said. The two of us were playing in the backyard after school one day when Mom called me into the house. Tommy, I'm a little concerned. About what? You and Yorkie. You spend so much time with him, you're even neglecting your homework. I'll do better, and I promise. Not only that, it's, well, nothing is forever, Tommy. Pets are subject to illness. There are accidents. I don't understand. It's just that you're so attached to him. Mom, dogs sometimes live 10 or 12 years. I'll be grown by then. We left it at that. There was no reason for me to worry. I took care of Yorkie. He was mine. I had every reason to believe he was mine forever. It happened in late February. There was snow on the ground. It was a dark day and cold. I was on the way home from school, as usual, and I stopped 3 blocks away to whistle for Yorkie. I waited. He didn't come. I whistled again. Then I began to run. I stopped before I got to the street in front of our house. I could see him lying very still in the middle of the street on his side. He wasn't moving. I saw the tire marks. I wanted to run away. I didn't want to see him, but I couldn't leave him there. Dad came into my room over the weekend. I hadn't eaten much for 2 days. He brought a piece of my favorite pie and a glass of milk. You can't just stop everything, son. We'll get you another dog. I don't want another dog. He stayed for a while, trying to cheer me up. When he got up to leave, I said, Dad, why do things have to die? Why? I wish I could give you a good answer, he said. The best I can say is this. Things have to die to make room for something new. And there will be something new in your life, Tommy. How do you know that? Because there has to be. I didn't believe him then. I guess it takes a while to learn anything. I mean, really learn.